Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2002 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com. This week from Unite Communities and DPAC Bristol, that's Disabled People Against the Cuts Bristol, it's Karen Passmore looking at disabled benefit cuts, the extent to which some of the most vulnerable people in society are finding it almost impossible to survive. Then also Michael Thomas from the Reach Out Trust, he looks at cults. What is a cult? How can you tell if someone is in a cult? He's looking particularly, and his organisation, the Reach Out Trust, does, at the Jehovah's Witnesses. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio, one word, .co.uk. We're based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft on Jamaica Street, and I'll give you our contact details at the end of the show.
I'm Karen Passmore. I started up DPAC Bristol and South West last year.
What does that stand for, DPAC?
It's Disabled People Against Cuts. And although there's a national group where they do a lot of activity, there didn't seem to be an awful lot in Bristol. And when we had the austerity march last year, I thought, well, now's a good time for us to have our own branch.
So, what's the point of having it? I mean, what's the impact been of austerity on disabled people?
It's been devastating. I mean, some of the most severely disabled people have had benefit cuts 9 times more than anybody else. So, I mean, if a normal person's lost a pound, we've lost 9. I mean, I used to get what they call an ILF, the Independent Living Fund. That they've closed that.
And what was that? What was that money for? What did it do?
That was to pay for my care. I have carers. That they are obviously you're aware of what they're doing with the DLA, Disability Living Allowance. They're changing that now to PIP. And the idea of
that's a personal independent payment.
It is, yep. Personal independent payment. And they've said that they expect that 60% of people who used to get DLA will now no longer get it. So thousands of people are losing their mobility cards each week, or they're losing their personal care. And it's just absolutely devastating.
Now, I've heard some people actually use the term that this is actually putting disabled people under house arrest, because it means that they don't have the mobility that they used to have.
Well, I, for example, I use the hoist to get in and out of the bed. So if I don't have a carer, I don't get out of bed. It's the same with the bath. I use a hoist to get in the bath. If I want a bath, I need somebody to help me to get into the bath and help me to get out of the bath. Without that care, I can't have it.
Can you quantify at all the amount of distress that the benefit cuts have caused across the country to disabled people?
A lot of people have killed themselves because they can't cope. I would say most disabled people are scared for the future. They're really, you know, petrified for the future. And it's not one cut that this government's doing. I mean, they're doing cut upon cut upon cut upon cut, and there's no end in sight.
Now, we've got a new Department for Work and Pensions Secretary, Esther McVeigh. What do you make of her? I seem to remember her famously saying that most disabled people were actually getting better, and that even if you had a permanent disability, they could still get rid of you off the figures.
That's, I think, what they're doing. I mean, we now have this new scheme called Employment Support Allowance, and it replaced incapacity benefits. And whereas before, if you were ill and you weren't able to work, you would be put on incapacity benefit. Now we have this new ESA, and you have to go for an assessment. And the assessments are crazy, because you've got people who are actually in hospital or in comas, and they're being found fit for work. I mean, I read up a story of a lady who was actually having a heart attack during an assessment, and she was so scared that if she called an ambulance, she would lose her allowance, that she just continued with the interview. And as soon as it was over, they called an ambulance and she was admitted to hospital. I mean, that is truly, truly scary.
There's also horrendous figures for length people are waiting to appeal to, over a year.
Yes, I'm on DLA. I get DLA for mobility and care.
That's Disability Living Allowance.
Disability Living Allowance. I've just had my application to claim PIP, and the form is unbelievably hard. It's 40 pages long. I actually use assistive technology, so I rang up the DWP and I said, look, there's no way on earth I can ever get this evidence together in the time that you've given me, and can I please have a form so that I can fill it online. And they just say, they just lied to you. They said they don't do these. And it's only when I went back and I pressed my MP that they said, okay, well, we will send you a form. And then they sent me the form, and the form they sent me, I couldn't fill in because it was locked. And now they've got to send me a new form. And all the time is ticking away. And I think how these tests, they're designed to sort of wear you down, to make you want to give up. And many people are giving up. They just can't face it anymore. And you're hearing stories of people are committing suicide. It's horrendous, the whole system.
See, the other side of the coin is you've got a kind of super rich... I mean, almost all of the people on the Sunday Times Rich List this year, the first 50 were all Conservative Party donors. These are people who keep their money in tax havens. Effectively, they're not paying any tax, even though they're super rich, super wealthy. It does seem to me as if this is a deliberate attack on people who are vulnerable. It's not some sort of accident that they're saying the central government, Theresa May, Esther McVeigh and the rest are actually saying these people can just die because they're not probably not Labour voters anyway.
I mean, I totally agree. I've stopped calling the Conservatives the Conservatives. I have a new name for them now, the Hostile Environment Party. I mean, they are hostile to immigrants. They're hostile to doctors. They're hostile to nurses. They're hostile to the NHS. They're hostile to poor people, to single parents, to pensioners. You name it, they're hostile to anyone. The only people that they love are the Russian billionaires who support them and the rich people. But everybody else, you know, yeah, let's stop calling them Tories. Let's call them the Hostile Environment Party, I mean, because that's accurate.
Is there any sort of Robin Hood fight back? I mean, it's almost to me as if you've got a kind of Sheriff of Nottingham in charge that nobody's got any real respect and time for. They know he's being cruel, but is there any fight back amongst disabled people, do you think?
Well, Deepak have been fighting back, and we've been fighting back since this started. I mean, we have a national website. We have campaigns all over the country. We demonstrate every year at the Tory Party conference. We demonstrate at Parliament. We try to storm the Houses of Commons. We've shut down Westminster Bridge. You know, we really scared Theresa May. She doesn't like us, I can assure you. And we also campaign against these private assessment companies like Atos and Maximus and Capita. Yeah, you know, we are the resistance. But unfortunately, what is happening with all the cuts to the local government, advice centres are closing down, welfare, you know, all these services are cutting down, and it's very hard for people because you feel like you're continuously being crushed by the system, and that's pretty much what's happening.
What about politically? Do you think there's anything that can be done to make sure that disabled people do get their basic rights? I noticed also the United Nations have stepped in and said that that Britain is deliberately being cruel to poor and disabled people, and they've condemned central government for it.
No, they didn't say that. They said this British government is guilty of grave and systematic abuses to disabled people. I mean, they went a lot further. I mean, the Tories or the Hostile Environment Party, they just dismissed it. But yeah, I mean, they are responsible for a lot of deaths, and with this introduction of universal credit, there'd be a lot more.
Okay, now let's just try and do our little bit to prevent any more of those deaths, and that is where someone is in a horrendous situation. They're either about to be evicted, they're hungry, they've got kids, they can't feed. What can people do?
Good question. You can try and join support networks. You can try and develop your own support networks, whether it be family, friends. Online, you can go on, and if you really are at rock bottom, I mean, you can ask for help. And most people in this country, believe it or not, are decent, you know, and they will if they can help. I mean,
isn't that part of the problem? That sometimes people are too proud to admit they just haven't got any money to pay the bills, to feed the kids.
I used to belong to a charity, which was an online charity called the Biscuit Fund, where a group of us used to put in whatever spare money we had, and if we heard of somebody who was really, really struggling, we'd step in to help. I mean, obviously, we couldn't do it across the board. You know, it was only here and there we could do it. But we can do it. You know, I mean, it doesn't cost much to knock on someone's door and ask, are you all right? You know, I mean, can I give someone a cup of tea? Can you give them that little bit of lift? Can you give them some reason to want to live tomorrow? It's not impossible, and we can all do it. It doesn't cost money. And if, for example, there's somebody next door and they've got no money, and you got a little bit extra food, I mean, is it going to cost you that much to cook them a dinner? or to make sure their kids have a dinner.
Also talking. I think sometimes just talking about your situation, even though, you know, swallowing your pride, don't bite your tongue.
Tell people.
Sometimes people have got advice. It's, actually, I've heard about a possible job going down the road or, you know, just getting a bit of advice, I think, Karen, can sometimes be helpful. What about trade unions? Are any of the trade unions doing anything much?
Trade unions are doing an awful lot. I'm a member of Unite Community, and obviously we all come together. We try to do what we can. We advise people. I mean,
is it Unite? It's for only for people who have got jobs and isn't it?
No, I'm retired, but I mean, Unite as a union. I mean, there's the main Unite, then there's Unite Retired section, there's Unite Community. There's all different sections of it. But together you've got strength. Together you've got a voice. I mean, if you're on your own, I mean, you feel alone. If you've got somebody there with you and you've got two or three or five or ten, you feel empowered. You feel that you can actually stand up. I mean, does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, I think the other thing is, of course, the system likes to atomise society into these little boxes, doesn't it? And kind of sit, watch the TV in your room on your own, and, you know, like, you can go mad like that.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, what this government is, they're following a tactic called divide and conquer. They will attack one group, and then they will try to control the media so that the media is on the side. So that group is demonised. And after they've got that group demonised, they will start on the next group, and so on and so on and so on. And they are literally creating division within society to try to weaken it.
Well, they seem to be doing quite well on some counts.
They're doing very well, unfortunately, but yeah.
The fight back continues. Now, look, one of the worst things that's come along over the last few years, it was Ian Duncan Smith's big brainchild, is this whole idea of universal credit.
Yes.
On the one hand, it does seem to make sense to bring all of the different benefits under one roof and to have just one. But I know that you've had a really good look at universal credit. You're very close to many people who are on this new benefit, and it's not really working. So what's your assessment of how it's been going?
Universal credit, it's a punishment regime now. It's, whereas before, if you was out to work, you could go along and claim job seekers allowance, and you could go and get a job, and job seekers, job centre staff.
Well, because after all, everyone's paid their national insurance, so that if you find yourself out of work, you get your money.
But no longer. I mean, now they brought in this new system, and it's going to affect virtually everybody, and people don't realise this. It's going to affect single mums, it's going to affect most people that don't earn a certain amount of money. It's even going to affect certain pensioners if they got a partner who was younger than the retirement age. And as I say, it's a punishment regime. I mean, I have a thing here called a claimant commitment, which is what everyone has to sign. And it says, finding and taking work. I'll look for work, any that I'm able to do.
So I can't just ask you how old you are?
I'm 68.
Right.
And they're saying here that you've got to be available to work for 48 hours every week. 48. I mean, I can remember when 40 hours a week was the average, was the normal working week. But the DWP are now saying it's got to be 48 hours a week. But it doesn't stop there, because on top of that 48 hours, they say you must be willing to take any job within 90 minutes travel distance. So that's an hour and a half to get to work and an hour and a half to get home. So that's actually 11 hours. So that's 66 hours a week that they're trying to force you to do now. And if you don't do this, if you don't sign this and complete with this, they can just say, boom, your money's gone.
That's everything.
That's your housing benefits gone. Every penny you get is gone. And your life is in the hands of a DWP official who can just say, boom, finished.
Well, you mentioned housing benefit there, and we're going to hear now a clip of a YouTuber. He's just an ordinary person like you and me, but he's got his own YouTube channel in which he sort of folds his arms, looks at the camera and says what he thinks, which is great because the BBC and people like that are not listening to people like him. His name's Tony Linford. Let's hear from him now what he makes of universal credit.
As it stands at the moment, even if all of your other benefits are stopped, you can approach the housing people at the council, you can go to your council offices, and something people need to know, you can make a claim for housing benefit on nil income. I would repeat that to anybody who finds themselves in this position. Go straight to your council offices, make a claim for housing benefit on nil income, and apparently that will also get you some vouchers towards food banks, and it will get you some help with at least electricity and gas. So, but once all of this is put in one universal credit payment, yeah, once it's all there, then they have the instant means to literally make you homeless. Yeah, they can just stop the benefits instantaneously, and probably within a matter of weeks you will be evicted and you will be on the streets, and there will be no more possibility that the housing benefit could at least be paid and keep the roof over your head, even though the Department of Work and Pensions, or Workfare and Punishment, had taken everything from you. It's about control. There's more behind universal credit, whether you are working, not working, poor, in work poor, sick, disabled, a carer. There's a lot going on behind that, and it's about them controlling your life and controlling whether you have the means to even stay alive or not.
So that was Tony Linford, Karen. What do you make of that? The idea that actually now it's going to be very, very easy to cut all people's benefits and get them evicted within just a short space of a few days or a couple of weeks.
He's spot on. Absolutely spot on. What he said is totally true. I mean, for example, I mean, when Universal Credit comes into Bristol, you'll no longer get housing benefit. The housing element of Universal Credit will be paid directly to you. But that can take 5 weeks. Well, they say it will take a minimum of 5 weeks, but it's been proved that it can take 8, 10, 12, even longer.
Housing associations aren't happy with this, are they?
bet your boots are not. They're not going to get paid. Now, if you've got a private landlord, after 8 weeks, if you haven't paid rent after 8 weeks, the landlord has the right to go to court and kick you out. So private landlords are even less happy with this. And so anyone who's unfortunate enough not to have social housing or a known house has to rent from somebody, they are really, really need to be worried.
We've got something like 400 rough sleepers. I mean, the official figures are 200, but Paul Smith, the cabinet member here in Bristol for housing, said he's seen estimates that are double that what the official figures are, which is actually quite good to have somebody who's an official on the city council saying, well, actually, the official figures aren't right. Now, this is only going to mean more homeless people. I think, is it just a question of this is just the way things are? We have to put up with it?
We don't have to put up with this at all. I mean, how can I say it? Can I get political? Next week, we have an election in Westbury on Trim and Henley's. And we can tell the Tories exactly what we think, kick them out. It may only be a local election, but we're sending a message. I would be horrified if I had to go onto the scheme. I've asked people online, and someone said to me, Universal Credit seems to apply differently to most people, but everyone I know that is on UC does not get full rent. There is always a shortfall. And if that's the case, the rent rails are going to build up and up and up. You're going to get to the point where the council say enough's enough.
Well, they always say, don't they, the Conservatives, there's no magic money tree.
Oh, there is.
You know, this. Well, there's a magic money tree for them. It's called QE. It's where money's made up out of nowhere, and it goes towards the stock market, and it also goes towards asset prices of big buildings, land, and things like that. It's not really working its way through to us anymore, because we had a sort of death of capitalism in 2008, where we had the massive bailouts of all the banks. Mm. Karen, do you think anybody in politics or in the country realises just how horrendously this is affecting the most vulnerable people in society? And is anything going to get done about this? Or are we just going down this road? Is it inevitably?
Well, I'm a Labour Party member and supporter, and I am praying that sooner or later, hopefully this year, we get an election. But it's possible. And that people will finally realise that the Tories are not this caring party. They're not even the nasty party anymore. They are the hostile environment party. And if you're not rich, if you're not a Russian billionaire, if you're not a director of a multi-billion pound company, the Tories are going to stuff you, and then they're going to stuff you again and again And again,
but they will say, hang on a minute, it's the society actually in reality is a bit like Survivor of the Fittest. For people who aren't very fit, I'm afraid they just have to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, but there was a, I'm not sure what the poem is. First they came for the Jews, then they came for this group, and then they came for this group, and then they came for this group, and then they came for me, and there was no one left to fight. I mean, what's the alternative? You have to fight back. You cannot allow this to happen. You can't.
Okay, well, with Deepak here in Bristol and any of the other groups that you're part of, including Unite, can you just give us some contact details where people can find you online and maybe even in the flesh? I suppose you do actually meet some
people. I do actually meet places, people, yeah. Well, I mean, Deepak is Deepak Bristol. We have a Facebook page. It's Deepak Bristol and Southwest. If they want to contact us on Twitter, we are at Deepak_Bristol. Unite the Union, that's in Victoria Street or Temple Street. I'm in Tony Benn House. You're welcome to come down there. Welcome to join the union. I mean, more than welcome. If you want to get involved with the Labour Party, which I am, we have the four constituencies. Thank God in this country, in this city, we have four Labour MPs. We also have a Labour mayor and we have Labour councils. And it's quite simple. Just if you want to join, just Google Labour Party and I want to join, and that's it. It's so simple. And help us join the fight back so we can have a better society.
Also, you've got a demo, apparently. Is that true?
We have a demo planned for May the 24th against Universal Credit.
What day of the week is that?
That's a Thursday.
Right.
It's going to start at 1:30 outside the customer service point at 100 Temple Street. It's a joint demo.
Where is that, 100 Temple Street?
It's... you're testing my knowledge now. You come over, go down... Is it Baldwin Street? And then you go over the bridge, and that's the main road down to Zippy, going down towards Temple Meads.
Okay, that's Victoria Street, isn't
Victoria
it?
Street, yeah, Victoria yeah. Street. But I think Temple Street is the actual... It's the council's customer service point. It's the building at the bottom of it.
Okay, is that for... housing benefit then?
Housing benefit. It's at the Temple Street Citizen Service Point, which is down in Victoria Street on the bottom corner by Temple Way.
Okay, so you're heading towards Temple Meads from Bristol Bridge down yes. Victoria Street, and it's at the end of there on the right
by the right-hand side.
By the roundabout, the old KPMG building.
Yep, and it's a joint demonstration by Unite Community and Deepak Bristol. And I'm hoping we have various other groups involved, like the People's Assembly, etc., ACORN. And come along and join us. And, you know, we'll have a little refreshment table to get people to get a drink or something to eat if you want. And if we can give you any advice, we will.
The other thing, of course, is it really helps to be with other people who are in a similar situation. It makes it a hell of a lot easier to bear it. Yep. Okay. Karen Passmore, thanks very much for joining us on
You're
Dialect.
Welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
My name is Michael Thomas. I am the chairman of Reach Out Trust, the second chairman. The first chairman, the founder of the trust, was Doug Harris. He passed away just 3 years ago, and I was asked to step in and fill his shoes, as it were, an impossible task. But I'm the chairman of Reach Out Trust. The Reach Out Trust is a ministry that reaches out to people in the cults, and we particularly emphasize in our work educating Christians, talking to churches and Christian groups, helping people to witness to the people on their doorstep or perhaps in their family or workplace who are in cults, and helping people to understand what the whole cult world is about.
Okay, so
and
could
more
you
importantly
could,
than that, what sorry. The Bible has to say.
Well, can you just take us through what is a cult? Can you just define a cult?
Cult is a. I don't like the word cult. People don't like the word cult, but there is no alternative. It sounds very pejorative, but a cult is a. If you think about three things, a church is an Orthodox Christian organization. A sect is a group of people or an organization that departs from main Christian orthodoxy in one or two areas, but keeps the main orthodoxy. A cult is something that was never Christian in the first place, but claims to be Christian. So, for instance, Jehovah's Witnesses are a cult because their origin and what they teach, there's nothing orthodox in it whatsoever.
Can you run us so through run through a whole sort of list of organizations which you would class as a cult?
Well, you're talking about Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, those are the main two. Freemasons, that is regarded as a cult. If you look at things like Islam isn't a cult, it's a different religion. Christadelphians, people are very often surprised that Christadelphians are a cult. Seventh-day Adventists, they're a cult. The people are very confused about Seventh-day Adventists. I'd like to say something about that, if I may. You get pastors, fraternals around the country where in different towns and cities, pastors from different denominations cooperate with one another in outreach in the city and in practical ways. And Seventh-day Adventist churches want to join in with that, which is very laudable. But local leaders don't know quite what to do with them because as far as they know, the only thing that's different about the Seventh-day Adventists is that they worship on a Saturday, which is really a secondary issue, isn't it? But the truth of the matter is Seventh-day Adventists, let me tell you three things about them. Number one, they regard their founding prophet, Ellen G. White, they've always regarded her writings as almost the same as scripture. Number two, they believe in a gospel of works. They keep a lot of Old Testament dietary laws. Many of them are vegetarians. They do things like they won't eat shellfish and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure the Adventists will say that actually they're very healthy as a result. So why not?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are a lot of things we can do that are healthy, but they do it because what they want to do is prove their worthiness to God, which is different. I mean, you and I might decide that a particular lifestyle is pleasing to God, but we don't look to that to verify our salvation. We don't say, well, because I live this lifestyle, God saves me.
Well, what about something like the Scientologists? Because they wouldn't pretend to be Christian, but they are surely a cult. I mean, it's very much controlled from the center, and the people who lead it, the whole thing is surrounded in extreme secrecy.
Yeah, I mean, Scientology is more a sort of a social cult. It's something that it claims to be a religion, but it isn't really. It deals in things like psychological manipulation. It was started by L. Ron Hubbard, who was, in his day, a very famous science fiction writer. And all his ideas came from that science fiction background. And so he has started this cult that's based on science fiction ideas. So he would not say, you wouldn't say that they were a Christian cult because they don't claim to be Christian, but they are a cult of sorts. They're a social cult, sociological cult. You have different kinds of cults. You can get political cults, social cults. You can have religious cults. And that one fits into, I'm surprised, in fact, that Scientology gets away with calling itself a church because it isn't.
What about things that everyone has heard of, like witchcraft? I mean, many people today say, well, you know, what with the Harry Potter books and things like that, it's becoming quite normal. But I know that there are sort of rites and rituals and secrecy plays a big part.
Yes. Well, witchcraft, again, you see, it's not a cult, it's occult.
Okay, so what's the difference?
The difference is that you have to listen to the people who are part of the organization or the movement or whatever it is, and they very often give you clues as to what they are, where they fit in. You won't find witches calling themselves Christians. People get confused. Witches, for instance, don't worship Satan. They're not Satanists. They're two different things. But witches tend to be pagan, and they tend to be into nature and nature remedies. And they do believe in witchcraft. They believe in spells and potions and that kind of thing. So the danger there is opening yourself up to strange and occult powers. a good question to ask when somebody says that something works, whether it's prayer or witchcraft or anything. If somebody says that something works, a good question to ask is, where does the power come from? In Christian prayer, the power comes from God. In witchcraft, it comes from a different place.
What about spells? Do you think people are still casting spells in Britain today?
I believe they are, yes. They are. Witchcraft is a very lively and living thing today. I mean, not far from where I'm sitting now, you go into the hinterland of Wales and there are covens and there are organizations and informal gatherings where people will cast spells. But you must understand that they don't necessarily cast spells to harm people. They don't set out to say, well, I'm going to cast this spell and I'm going to put harm on this person. They often will want to try and cast a spell to do good. You can pick up books about this in bookshops in the middle of the city now. And you just look through them and they have love potions and spells to make you successful. So they don't see themselves as doing something harmful.
Is there any difference between black witchcraft and white witchcraft, or is that just a myth?
That's a myth. I mean, witchcraft is witchcraft. It's the same as talking about a good person and a bad person, you know. There are people who are witches who are good people, as far as the world's understanding of good is concerned. Then there are people who are bad people.
Well, you might say the same about Christians, you know, that some people use this term to get away with doing wicked things because it's just a convenient term to use.
Yeah. That's true. There are people who claim to be followers of the Lord Jesus Christ, but who in the way they live their lives and the way they deal with people are anything but.
You know what?
Jesus said, by their fruits you shall know them.
I'm thinking about people like Bush and Blair, you know, because I think at the time when they said, you know, they both said that they were Christians and then they went on and caused absolute devastation in Iraq, particularly with the illegal invasion. A lot of people questioned whether they really were or not. But look, another side of this is quite big in Britain. It's actually supposed to be the centre of world Freemasonry. What does a Mason believe?
Well, Masonry is a secret organization. That's the first thing you need to understand. The Duke of Kent was challenged about this some years ago and about the secrecy. And his reply was that Masonry isn't a secret organization. It's an organization with secrets. I can't figure out the difference between those two things. But it's a secret organization. It's a fraternity. And they want you to think and believe that they're a fraternity like any other sort of civic organization, like, for instance, like the Rotary Club that does a lot of good in the community and is very public. But they do things behind closed doors and they have very strange rituals that they go through. And because it's secret, you don't really know what sort of arrangements they have, what sort of relationships they have in the world with each other and with the world.
But most Freemasons would class themselves as Christians. Are they deluding themselves or lying, or are they just another brand of Christianity?
If you become a Freemason in this country, in the UK, you will swear allegiance by putting your right hand on the Bible. If you become a Freemason in another country where there's a different sacred text, you will swear allegiance by putting your hand on that text. So what they do is they have this idea of God, a higher power that they submit to. But then they doctrinally, they will accept the fact that this God is the same God no matter what religion you have. So you can join the Freemasons and swear on the Quran, or you can swear on, I don't know if anybody's ever sworn on the Book of Mormon, but whatever it is, the sacred text of that community, you can be a Freemason and swear on that text. So that leads me to believe that they really, they're not that fussy about what god they worship.
What about the Mormons you mentioned there? I mean, there is something called the Book of Mormon, which I believe is an extra book that Mormons add to the Bible.
Yeah. I've got a copy here with me, actually. Mormonism started in upper New York State in the 1830s. And what happened was, from about 1827 onwards, a man by the name of Joseph Smith, who at the time was a gold digger, he used to pretend that through necromancy he could find buried treasure. And farmers used to pay him to, by magic, find treasure on their land so they wouldn't need to farm it. They could just have this treasure.
So he was doing a kind of dowsing, I guess.
Yeah, that kind of thing. He was doing that kind of thing. And in 1826, he was prosecuted successfully for doing it. And then from 1827 onwards, he began to make these claims that having found some gold plates on which a book was written. And by 1830, he'd published the Book of Mormon, which he said was a history of the ancient inhabitants of America, the original inhabitants, who were the forebears of the American Indians. But it's not until 1840 that he developed a whole myth and a story around that and started to talk about having received visions and seen angels and that kind of thing. And the Book of Mormon it sounds like the Old Testament. It's very, very much like the King James Bible in its language. But it gives itself away because it isn't quite King James English. It's just his copy of King James English.
So what do the Mormons actually believe then?
Well, they have this thing called the Plan of Salvation, which basically they believe that God was once a man who became God. And when he became God, he created his own little universe. And he had children in a pre-mortal existence, a pre-mortal life. We were all there with God. And we came to this earth in order to learn to be like him. And they believe that through obedience to the Mormon gospel, the Mormon story, they can themselves attain to godhood and become their own gods. And they see it as a cycle, as a life cycle of gods.
I mean, surely Christians have a similar thing with Jesus, is that they try and learn from him and become children of God.
No, it's not the same thing, you see, because more we believe, the Bible teaches us that we become children of God through adoption. We are the children of God through creation, and we are the children of God through adoption, through the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. For Mormons, they believe that we are literally the children of God in a pre-mortal existence. And that we come to this earth in order to learn to be more like him and become gods. Christians don't believe that we will become gods. We believe that we will become the men and women and the boys and girls that we were always meant to be in creation. But there's only one God.
Now, the Jehovah's Witnesses are on a big recruitment drive. They have been for the last year or so. I mean, they have these regularly. You'll see them in many city centres, standing there day after day, handing out their leaflets. The Watchtower, I think, is their publication, and also knocking on doors. So, I mean, for many people, they see them as very genuine. The people who stood in the street do seem like they really believe what they're saying. I mean, surely that's not a cult.
They are genuine. They're lovely people. I've got friends who are Mormons. I've got friends who are Jehovah's Witnesses. I had a Jehovah's Witness just come to my door this week just to say hello. I've known him for many, many years. And he's a lovely guy, and they are genuine people. They really believe what they're saying. But they're in a lot of trouble at the moment. One of the reasons they're having a big recruitment drive is because they're losing members at quite a rate. Because for various reasons, they're a very controlling cult. They're incredibly controlling. But there have been a lot of scandals about child abuse. and they're coming in at a tremendous amount of pressure in other parts of the world. Russia, they've been banned altogether. They're really being treated very badly over there.
So you mentioned these child abuse, but I mean, surely that can happen. It happened in the Church of England. It's happened in the Catholic Church as well.
Indeed.
What is it about the Jehovah's Witnesses that makes you class them as a cult?
What casts them as a cult is that, first of all, they deny the deity of Christ. And the Bible teaches the deity of Christ. Secondly, they believe in a gospel of works. They believe that they can earn their way into God's good books, if you like.
But I mean, surely that's just all Protestants believe that from the days of Martin Luther and the Reformation.
No. The Bible says that we are saved by grace, not by works. The Bible is very clear on that. We are saved by grace, not by works, because we can't save ourselves, because we're in a state of sin. We cannot save ourselves. We cannot come up to the mark. In fact, Paul, in his letter to the Romans, says that we all fall short of the glory of God. What God requires of us, we cannot do. That's why Jesus came, in order to die for us, in order to pay the penalty for our sin, and in order for us to gain from his righteousness and then be right with God. Whereas with Jehovah's Witnesses, that one of the big marks of a cult is that it's a gospel of works. They believe that they can work their way to heaven. In fact, Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe they're going to go to heaven. They believe that they're going to be separated from God, that only 144,000 will go to heaven, and the rest will live in paradise on earth.
Fascinating. Michael, I mean, you've had a lot of experience of this over the years. What would you class as the most dangerous cult?
Well, that's a tough question. There's a lot of the ones that you don't think are cults. You know, I said the Seventh-day Adventists, when you talk to a Seventh-day Adventist, you're talking to somebody who thinks that because you're not a Seventh-day Adventist, you carry the mark of the beast. That is serious stuff. And, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, people know that the Jehovah's Witnesses are different. Mormonism is beginning to get now a lot of respectability about it. It's a very clever cult that packages itself really well to sell itself to the public, very PR conscious. Again, it's one of those things that people are accepting now. And that's what's dangerous. If you talk about Scientology, everybody knows Scientology is wacky. If you talk about Jehovah's Witnesses, people have a beef with Jehovah's Witnesses about all sorts of things. But if you talk about Seventh-day Adventists, if you talk about Mormons, people aren't so sure what to make of these people. And you can be drawn into something without realizing, you know, this is a cult. And people need to understand, if you're somebody with a religious faith, you make life-changing decisions based on your faith. So it's important that you feel that those decisions, those life-changing decisions, are worth making. And when you find out that actually this is a lie, this is a cult, and I shouldn't have done that, it is really very, very disappointing. And it can do a lot of damage to people, and it can take years to get over it.
I suppose if people join thinking that they're kind of joining some sort of heavenly brigade of wonderful people, and then they suddenly find out, oh dear, the people running this are actually possibly even quite evil, that's likely to really shake you up as a person. Also, I just wondered, have you had any experience recently of anyone that's come out of a cult, and why have they decided to come out of it?
Yes, we're talking at the moment to some people in the UK, I can't tell you where, who are coming out of the Jehovah's Witnesses, and a lot of it is because of the way they've been treated. They've simply asked one or two questions, and because they've asked awkward questions, they've been, the word is purged. They've been driven out of the organization and they're shunned. And they're just good, honest people who asked a couple of questions and the organization didn't like it. One of the things you've got to watch out for, you know, people join things, people look for God, look for community, look for an open community that allows you to ask questions. One of the things about a cult is that it's isolationist. Jehovah's Witnesses are very isolationist. When you're isolationist, it's like living in an echo chamber, and all you hear is the same stuff echoed back at you. Your own peculiar orthodoxy. You need to live in an open community where you can ask questions, where you can consult books for yourself, where you can measure your own growth and see what's over there and what's over there. It's important that you have that. You must ask questions. A good preacher will always say, don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourself.
Now, Michael, without giving anything away, what sorts of questions were these people asking that caused so much trouble for them within the cult?
I think one of the questions they were asking was about there's a big child abuse scandal in Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's Witnesses are not child abusers, all right? But there's a particularly strange policy in that organization that hides child abuse in a way that you've never seen anywhere else. It is really very peculiar. And they were asking questions about that. And they were asking questions about some of the things that were being done within the organization. And the things like if somebody leaves the organization, they're shunned. Yeah, and you're not supposed to have anything to do with them. And if you do have something to do with them, you're shunned. And all that was going on. And they were questioning this. And they would say, well, hang on a sec now. Is this really the Christian way to behave? And, of course, they closed ranks and they said, no, we don't want you among us. If you're going to ask. If you're going to criticize the organization, then you have to leave.
Fascinating, because actually, I mean, that is a really dangerous, any kind of organisation, whether it be a church, a government, a military, actually thrives and will be successful on good people asking good questions about it. So tell us about how Reach Out Trust first started. I understand it was started by a chap called Doug Harris.
Yeah, Doug Harris was living in Twickenham and opposite the rugby ground, and he saw some activity, thousands of people pouring into the ground, and there was no game on, and he didn't know what was happening, so he inquired about it, and it was a Jehovah's Witness convention. So being a local church leader, he decided he was going to organize a one-off local witness and talk to Jehovah's Witnesses as they were going in and coming out. And one thing led to another, and people started showing an interest in what he was saying. And he had to answer their inquiries. And that led to him establishing a small ministry called Reach Out Trust. And it was initially an outreach to Jehovah's Witnesses on one occasion that became an outreach to Jehovah's Witnesses across the country. That became a ministry to the cults. That was back in the early 1980s.
Do you think that cults are growing, shrinking? Because there's obviously something seductive about this. People want to be part of the club, don't they? They want to be part of an organisation, and particularly if it's reasonably wealthy, you know, it actually has that amazing feel-good factor.
Yes, and I'm glad you hit on that one. It's people want to be part of something, and if it's something that's wealthy, if it's something that looks as if it's promising a better life. The cults are thriving in the Southern Hemisphere for those reasons. And they're thriving in places, some of the places in Asia as well. People are very poor. So a guy comes along and he says, you know, you can dress like me, you can be in a suit like me, you can be a stand up at the front like me and be a leader like me and have prestige like I have. And when you're very poor and you've got nothing much going for you, that's very, very attractive. So, yeah, they're thriving in other parts of the world. Not so much in the West now.
What about people who you've helped come out of these cults? I mean, do they find that your organisation has done something particularly good for them? Because, I mean, I just wonder, aren't you... You know, sometimes actually maybe even as a ministry itself, interfering a little bit too much in people's own lives.
Well, not really. We don't have a great deal of contact with cult members. We're helping some people now simply because they found us on the internet and they wanted to know more, and they've asked us to help them because they've come up with witnesses. A lot of the time, we're kind of indirectly involved because we teach Christians about the cults. We're trying to allay a lot of fears that people have and say to people, you know, if you know your Bible and you know the Lord Jesus Christ, you shouldn't be afraid of the person standing on your doorstep. It's just a man or a woman wanting to talk about God. So why don't you talk to them about God and share with them? We teach them how to use the Bible to get their point across, because it's not about your opinion or my opinion. It's simply about, well, what does the Word of God say? When I first came out of a cult, I came out of Mormonism, and the chap who was helping us, a lovely guy, he's still a very close friend of mine, John, he used to say, but what does it say in the Bible? And I used to say, well, yeah, I know what it says, but it means this. And he'd say to me, yeah, but don't you think it means what it says? And that's all we do. We just take the Bible and we take what they say and they claim, and we hold it up to the truth of the Word of God, and we teach other people to do the same thing.
So why is it that so many of these cults seem to be based on Christianity some sort of Christian idea?
Yeah, that's a good question. They're parasitic. One of the things about cults is they're parasitic. They don't really break new ground. You know, the way that Christian churches will go out into parts of the world where the message hasn't been heard. The cults don't do that. They go into parts of the world where the Christian church, particularly the evangelical church, has already put down roots. And then they will come in on the back of that, and they will say, well, we're the proper version of that thing that you heard over there. So they're very parasitic. They don't break new ground.
And how do people find your website, your work, your phone number, that sort of thing, Michael?
Well, they can go to reachouttrust.org. That's our website, and all our details are on there. We have a whole catalogue of articles and resources to help you. And you can access a lot of stuff for free. If you go onto the website, you can email me. You can email Reach Out Trust. You can email me personally. My email address is on there. You can reach me at reachouttrust1@gmail.com. reachouttrust1@gmail.com. Please email me. Ask me questions. I'm more than happy to field questions from people.
Okay, Michael Thomas from Reach Out Trust, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you very much for listening, Tony. God bless you.
That's all for this week. Dialect's Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. You can subscribe and listen the week before broadcast if you like at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Karen Passmore from DPAC Bristol, Disabled People Against the Cuts, and also Unite Communities, the branch of the union Unite, which anyone can join, whether you're retired, unemployed, or anything. And also to Michael Thomas from the Reach Out Trust you just heard there. Also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialect's a Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street, on 0117 909 6897. They're online at prsc.org.uk, and you can all volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain through the national volunteering website do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week, goodbye for now.
Caucasian time. Are you a drug dealer? And if so, why?
Gerald Hawksworth, White Man's Gazette. Why are our prisons so overpopulated with black men?
Excuse me, right here.
Excuse me, yes. Peter Clannings, the White Street Journal. Why is it that most violent crimes are committed by black American males?
Excuse me, please answer the question.
I'm just a young black man trying to be paid so I could be like the other man and have it made. Life in the city is rough. Welfare don't pay enough. A good job for the young black man is a buffer. In order to survive, somebody's gotta suffer. I only rob the rich to feed my family, and now they call me a menace to society. I'm a menace to society.
I'm a menace to society.
Cause I'm a menace to society. Cause I'm a menace to society.
I'm a menace to society.
Good job in a place like the steel mill sounds good, but I make more money from a neighborhood, and my neighborhood keeps both pockets fat, so I keep going back. That's where the money's at. Black from hell, that's who I am and where I've been. Task force rolls by, I grin. Then I commence to collecting my mail, hoping and praying not to end up in a jail cell. Mama's whole life is depending on me, cause it's hard to survive on AFDC. Food stamps, free milk and cheese. When I think about it, hit another liquor store and yell freeze. Everybody on the floor. Then I empty the cash drawer and run for the front door. This is the reason why, you see, I'm a menace to society. I'm a menace to society.
I'm a menace to society.
I'm called a menace to society. I'm a menace to society.
I'm a menace to society.
Furthermore, I feel the needs of the black community has yet to be met. Our federal government and its corporate allies have the means necessary to put an end to this political oppression, which continues to keep the African American struggling for survival.
The streets are unsafe. With a brother like me, see, I take your car, VCR, and your TV. I drive away singing songs on your radio. My conscience starts talking to me, saying way to go. Cause once again, my family could be fed, the rent is paid. So we can rest our head. I look forward to a brighter day. All I can do is pray and hope and pray. Task force is brutal, and I'm angry.